The second I heard her voice, I was beamed back to being an 11-year-old boy listening to one of his favorite radio personalities on his absolute favorite radio station. Happy 50th birthday, PLR. I'm Chaz from Chaz and AJ in the Morning. Marcia Simon was at PLR from 1975 to 1981. She did The Night Show in 1975, following Stoneman. And then she moved to mornings in 1978. And there's a very interesting story in here as to why she moved into mornings. She's rightfully very proud to be the very first female morning show host in Connecticut radio. She was very close with Stoneman, beyond a work relationship. And she was kind enough to share a couple of really neat Stoneman stories, including one that has her and Stoneman and maybe someone's altered a little bit on the air. She is just one of the best still today. Marcia Simon, what brought you to radio?
All right. So I'll kind of speed up the long story. I went to college as a music major at Hart School of Music, which is part of the University of Hartford. And my intention was to be a chamber singer. I was really into opera and things like that.
Wow.
Orientation, first day, my freshman arrival, I'm walking around campus and I walked into the school radio station and something bit me. It's like the bug. And it could have been this really cute guy who was standing right there, said, "Hey, come on in." I'm like, okay. But I quickly gravitated towards the radio station and I eventually switched my major over to communications, and I got a part-time job at WHCN in Hartford.
And that was playing
Sunday night.
They were playing rock at that time.
They were, and on they had one female jock. She did one shift. It was a Sunday night, and it included playing records for 2 hours, and then doing this thing called the Prisoner Request Show, where you would have prisoners writing in from Summers, and I don't even know if those prisons are still there. There was a high security and a low security Enfield and Summers, right. And they would write in their requests. And this job was going, reading the letters and playing the requests. And that was my first commercial job in radio.
Do you remember any of the letters?
It's really weird. Yeah, I actually have them because I got a call like to try and find some old air checks of PLR. So I was digging up and like through some boxes of stuff. I didn't find the air checks that I wanted, but I found some of those letters. Oh my God. There were a lot of, I have to say, fantastic artwork that came with those letters. But anyway, but after that Sunday night thing, I got a full-time job at a little station in West Springfield, Massachusetts. And it was like 7 to midnight.
Would we recognize the call letters?
Well, it was at that time called WTXL. I have no, it used to be something else. I think okay. It was, I don't even remember. It was an AM station.
All right.
Yeah. Another PLR alum, Dave Calabrese, Trapper Dave, wound up working there also.
Oh, wow.
It was really kind of, yeah. And he also came from the University of Hartford, WWUH, which was a breeding ground for HCN, just like YBC is a breeding ground for PLR, or at least it was back in the day. So then I did that, and then I got fired from that job because, you know, everyone gets fired in radio.
What did you do? What happened? They didn't understand your greatness.
They didn't understand my way of thinking, which was... Okay, so you've got a five-hour shift, and then they put you in for a two-hour production shift, meaning you're available to do commercials or promos, record all those things you hear the jocks doing, right? The station was slow. It's a little AM station, so there wasn't 2 hours of work to fill. So, you know, it was midnight when I got off the air, so I'd leave. And there were times where there was nothing to do, so I left, but I had to fill out a timesheet every week, and they told me I was filling in the timesheet for work I didn't do. And I said, I was available. I said, you hired me to do this shift and be available for 2 hours. I did. Here are my hours. And they said, that's dishonest. I said, no, it's not. And they said, okay, you're fired. Okay. Something like that.
Yeah. Look where you ended up.
It was a long time ago. But anyway, so then what happened was I got a job at WCCC doing overnight, the overnight queen at this point. And it was at a time where WDRC had a fire in their building, so they were in temporary studios, and I used to ride the elevator up and down with Barry Grant, who at that time, did a thing called Grant's Tomb.
It's still legendary today. What was so what was so special about that?
So Barry's whole philosophy, and he tried to get me into this when he hired me at PLR, was that, you know, when you're up late night, your audience isn't the people who have insomnia and are making love and doing whatever they're doing, getting stoned. They're working. They're third shifters. They want to hear that rock and roll music. They want to be awake. They want to dance, you know. And his whole thing, when everything else was mellow, he was rocking. And that was his thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So and that became hugely popular because you did have all the third shift workers at the factories, at the hospitals, or, you know, wherever you can think of people working overnight.
Right. And DRC was basically almost top 40 during the day, and then he's going on at night playing rock.
Yeah, but here's the other interesting about that job for me and why it was transitional, because at the same time just happened to be this one of the periods where Stoneman had been fired from PLR. So he was working at CCC for a time at night. So I followed Stoneman at CCC.
That's incredible.
I know.
Because it happens later on PLR.
He's the one who brought me over. So when Barry got hired to be the program director at PLR, he brought Stoneman, and Stoney said, "You really should bring Marcia." So it was Stoneman who got me to PLR.
Wow.
That's what happened.
That's how you came in. So you came in as Rock Woman Night Show.
Almost. I came in doing, because there wasn't, Eddie Wazoo was doing that 10 to 2 shift at night. And Barry didn't want, you know, he liked Eddie. And he said, well, I'm keeping Eddie. So you started overnights. We'll see what happens, you know. So I did overnights for a while. And then there was some shift, and Eddie moved over to afternoons, opened up the 10 to 2 spot.
I don't remember who was doing afternoons before Eddie? Do you remember?
Barry Grant. Oh, no, wait, that was when Barry came in. How did that happen? Hmm. Oh, yeah, no, it was, oh, God. Yeah, no, so Barry came in, and he took the afternoon slot,
okay.
And Eddie was at night, and then I guess when Barry got fired or left or whatever he did, I don't remember, then Eddie moved into afternoons, and then I moved into 10 to 2.
Right.
And, you know, he passed away eventually, and it was, you know. I mean,
yeah, bummer.
He gave me a good job, and he was very nice to me.
Oh, yeah. That's someone you'll always remember. So you're doing overnights, and then, hold on, I got to move my microphone because my cat's about to jump up on the keyboard of this thing. So you're doing overnights, and then Eddie moves to afternoons, and you move up to 10 to 2 following Stoneman. And do you immediately change your name to Rock Woman?
Okay, then at that point, Gordon is program director, and he starts doing middays. And we all went out. We used to hang out at the old Heidelberg on Chapel Street, which now,
How old are you at this point?
Oh, I was so young. I'm like 10 years older, younger than the rest of the staff at this point. I mean,
okay.
I was straight out of school. So I'm like, you know, not even in my mid-20s.
Oh, that's amazing. So you're in your mid-20s on this massive rock station.
No. Oh, God, the things naivete will bring you. So we're all goofing around. We're drinking beers or, you know, doing whatever we're doing at the Heidelberg. It was a great spot for us to hang out. It was just down the street from the station at the time. And I don't know who was saying, oh, you're going to come on after Stone Man. You should be Rock Lady and blah, blah, blah. And came out Rock Woman. So I don't know if it was Gordon or it was, I don't know who named it me that, but that's what happened.
That's cool.
You know, it was just nice to be a little bit earlier. And then a couple years after that, then I moved to mornings. And
I remember
morning
that.
Drive.
Yeah, that's one of the things we have in common. We both did nights and mornings on PLR.
Except I was the first female and you weren't.
No, I was the second. Before we get to your morning thing, what was it like being a young girl at night on a major rock station?
Never thought about it like that. but it was a lot of fun. It was probably the best job on the planet.
Yeah, you know, no doubt.
Yeah, because there was so much. I mean, everything was going on at that time. I mean, the entertainment at Toad's and the concerts at the Coliseum, and there was this other place that it just vanished. It was called the Higgins Music Hall. And every time I ask people what happened to the Higgins Music Hall, they go like, "Huh?" But I remember it was like the Shabu of this area, you know, the Shabu being up in like Willimantic, which also was a little nightclub that had fantastic entertainment, you know. And but the bad thing about working nights is you'd go to the beginning of a show and you'd have to leave in the middle, to go to work.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you
you had to drive really carefully on the highway.
Yeah. Would Jimmy Complic bring artists by for you to interview? I'm thinking if you're coming on at 10, probably they'd come on after, right? After their show?
They really didn't come around at night, you know? If anything, the acts would go over to Toad's place before the show or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
You know? And most of those interviews happen during middays and afternoons.
Right. Did you do any interviews? Probably more in the morning, right?
You know, we didn't do any. So I was talking to Bob Neri about that. Most of the interviews, they all happened during middays and afternoons at that point.
Do you have any?
You know, the bands came in, you know, they came, you know, they arrived to do the show, you know, sometime that afternoon. And then, you know, they'd come in and do their thing, interviews and stuff like that, before they went back to their hotel to get ready to do the show.
Right. You weren't there early enough. When you were doing 10 to 2, you weren't there that early to run into them.
Right. And, you know, and like I wasn't, you know, the whole fame and fortune thing, it really didn't, you know, I didn't need to be a groupie or, you know, it didn't turn me on. I'm like, so-and-so's got to be.
I got to get in and get a picture. Right.
Yeah. I was never into that thing.
And what's interesting is, you know, a lot of these artists that are icons now, they were on their first album or so when they were walking into the radio station. So it wasn't a big deal, as big of a deal as it would be today.
True.
Toad's Place, would you go there before your shift? And do you remember any of the shows? Would you get up on stage, make announcements?
Yeah, all that stuff. I don't remember all the bands I saw there. But yeah, I mean, we were at Toad's Place a lot. And there was also the Arcadia Ballroom that had more local. Yeah. That was another place that we used to go. If there wasn't like a name act at Toad's, we'd be over at the Arcadia.
Was there an Agora? Why do I think there was?
Oh, that's what I'm. Yeah, that Agora. One too. That was another one. That was another one, yeah.
Do you remember when Billy Joel played at Toad's Place?
I do.
Were you there?
I think I was. We have these conversations like, it's more like, what do you remember seeing? And it's like, can you make that multiple choice and say, did you see it?
I remember that was quite an event. I can still remember exactly where I was in my car when I heard Eddie Wazoo crack the mic and say, we're just announcing this right now. Billy Joel's playing Toad's Place tonight. And tickets are going on sale right now at blah, 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 blah. I was like, holy shit. I mean, this guy was the biggest performer in the world at the time, rock and pop. And for him to play Toad's Place was stunning.
Actually, you know what? Now it's coming back to me. I was there.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's awesome. Yeah.
And I was also there for the Rolling Stones.
Were you?
Yeah, but that was after I left PLR. Still in New Haven. Yeah.
How did you find out about it? Did Mike call you? Did Jimmy call you? Who called you?
Who called me? Actually, I think Storm and Norman called me.
Oh, he's the best. I just saw him this morning.
Because then for a while, when I was doing mornings, he was doing overnight. Right. So then I think, I don't remember who told him. Maybe Mike told him. I don't know how he heard about it.
I was talking to Dick Colt, and he asked me to ask you if you remember the live broadcast with Boston, the band.
At Trodden Ossel?
I don't know. I didn't get that far with him.
I think they were there. I remember the Fleetwood Mac one at Trodden Ossel. And I remember Stevie Nicks coming out. And that was her first. They were trying her out. That was her first performance. Their album with Buckingham Nicks hadn't come out yet. And she goes, this is a brand new song. We've never sung it before. It's about a Welsh witch, and it's Rhiannon.
Wow.
And that was the first time they ever did it.
And what was your impression? Do you remember when you were hearing that for the first time?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah, it was great.
Holy shit.
But, of course, being that close to any, you know, I mean, you're sitting on the floor where, you know, if they, you know, you could taste, smell their breath if they really wanted you to.
I heard that they were partying up pretty good, or at least before they started performing.
It's possible. I actually read a book. I think I'm in here in my room that I'm sitting in, but it was sort of a biography of Fleetwood Mac, and it talked about some of their party days were pretty hard. I never partied with them, so I can't say. And would I be able to judge their behavior at that time?
Yeah, right. Beats me. It would seem normal to you. Were you a partier?
Like as my mother told me, never do heroin.
Right. Good.
It seemed like everything else was fair game.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
But don't go, you know. But fortunately, you know, I talk to my friends. It's like, God, we're still alive. You know, like nothing really bad happened.
Right.
So.
And then you moved to mornings. What transpired for that to happen? How long were you doing nights?
I came in 75 and did the mornings 78. So probably like two and a half, maybe 6 months overnight to move to nights.
Okay, and then,
like that.
You know what, before we jump to mornings, you know, just coming on after Stone Man, there's legendary stories about him partying and living up to his name, Stone Man. What was that like? Do you have any Stone Man stories?
Yeah, but bless his soul, I'm not going to... You know, see, the thing is that when I say we were friends, we were really friends outside of the station. Stoney married... a Danish au pair. You know, he went to a party that some friends he had, and he married a young, beautiful Danish woman. And she didn't know many people, and there weren't many females, so she and I became friends. And we lived not far from each other, you know. And I had my days free, so like we used to hang out because. You know, I knew the family, you know, I knew it. So then, of course, I met his parents. And, you know, it was a different kind of relationship I had with them than maybe a lot of other people who just knew him as the partier. But, yeah, there was some of that going on, too.
Yeah.
I can only tell this story because he's not going to get in trouble because he's no longer with us. But, and this is true, the legendary suitcase, the briefcase that he carried all the time. You know, so, like he would always say, can I get you something? Meaning, you know, like, what's your preference? Feed your head, you know? So I'm like, I don't know. So he'd open it up and he'd go, he has like five kinds of pot. He'd have ups, downs, yellows, greens, blues, white powders. I said, what do you, he goes, I don't do a lot of this stuff. He goes, what my friends do. So I carry it around with me.
What a good friend he is.
He was an excellent friend.
He's carrying stuff. Hey, my friends, I don't do it, but my friends do. So here you go.
Well, he didn't say he didn't do any of it. Oh. He didn't do everything that was in there. I'm not saying he was straight, you know? But,
yeah.
You know, everyone has their preference, right?
You know, he played a lot of music. He wasn't a talk radio host. But the impact he left, I don't know if there's anyone that I can think of in the nation that played so much music that is so memorable, left such an impact on the listeners. Would you agree with that?
So I do remember this, remember that. And then, like, when I came in, he would tell me, you know, his philosophy about it is he goes, you know, a lot of jocks like to talk and tell their stories and everything. And he goes, like, people don't want to hear that. They're not listening. They're not tuning into the station to hear you. They want to hear the music. So he said very little. And then when it came to playing an album, he'd always play the most popular song. And I said, well, why don't you play that? He goes, this is the song that people want to hear. They want to hear Stairway to Heaven. I'm like, but there are so many other good songs in the album. He said, I know, but that's not the one. Those aren't the ones they want to hear. I said, well, maybe they don't know they want to hear them because no one ever plays them. Like, isn't it our job to introduce the great songs to people? And he goes, well, that's not what I'm going to do. Because I just, you know, I hear, he'd the phones would ring constantly, and you could look and just see how many requests came in for the same songs. Because if that many people want to hear that song, I'm going to play that song.
You know, and it's interesting that at such an early period in rock radio, he had a very specific philosophy. And I've heard other people say that he knew exactly how he wanted to approach it. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, when you go to a concert, at least me, when I go to a concert, I want to hear the hits.
I know. And yeah. If the band that you're seeing, like if you go to see the Eagles and they don't do like Hotel California, you're going to be pissed.
Right. I was asking Rick Allison, about what happened with Stone Man. And so he was there and then went to CCC and then came back, right?
Correct.
What happened the first time? Do you remember?
Well, see, I know he got fired. I can't tell you why he got fired.
Yeah.
When you do, we'll figure out who you're going to interview next on the podcast, and we'll make sure they tell the story. But
it's radio, whatever. He ends up at CCC. And then,
I mean, I'm guessing it was more like a behavioral punishment than a ratings game.
Yeah. I mean, he always had great numbers from what I heard.
Yeah.
Like great numbers. So before you move into mornings, it's Bob Neri in the morning, Gordon Weingarth midday, Eddie Wazoo afternoon, Stone Man evenings, and Rock Woman nights.
Right.
What transpired to move you into morning drive?
So this is my recollection of it. And, you know, you would think that it would have to do with ratings and all that kind of stuff. Now, you talked to Bob, and, we're really good friends, so I don't think he'd mind me telling the story. Sorry, Bob, if you do. But we've talked about it before. So I don't know if people told you that there were seven of us, like, who lived at the station, who worked at the station, who lived together. Like, we were really pretty well bonded.
Yeah.
So
at his house, right? At his farm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Bob and Natalie.
Yeah.
Natalie, they weren't married at that time. Bob's a night person. I wasn't a night person or a morning person. I don't care. I set the clock. I wake up. It doesn't matter. But Bob sometimes, like I would get home, like my shift ended at 2. I'd do some, I'd hang out for a while, do whatever needed to be done. It might be 4 o'clock in the morning before I get home. Bob needs to be on the air at 6. So you would think that it would be like ships in the night and we'd pass each other, but like I'd be awake. I'm like, should I be waking up by now? And I'm like, Bob, you wake? Not like, So I think it became a kind of thing where like the morning thing wasn't working for him. Because you did have all those concerts at night and stuff. It was a lifestyle thing. So it was more like Bob wasn't going to do the mornings because it was just way too early in the morning. And I thought, I'll do it. Now, that's probably like a 23-year-old's naive version of the whole story. But that's how it went down in my mind.
Yeah.
We just traded.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. Bob basically said the same story. He just had a hard time getting in, and Gordon said, maybe mornings aren't for you.
You know, and it's one thing if you're late, but when you have an overnight person who isn't expecting to stay longer to do like a morning drive shift and just change that whole like mental head.
Right.
It's kind of hard, So.
Who was doing overnights then? Do you remember?
I think it was George Scheidner.
Oh, wow.
I know Norman did him for a while and George did him for a while. And I don't remember like when and how that changed.
And then what was that like taking over morning drive? Was there a different pressure or?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great. Like I was the first morning drive female in Connecticut. That wasn't like just someone who giggles and goes, or did the news or something like
that.
But to actually host a morning show.
Yeah.
But even then, it was mostly music. It was just making sure it's the right music. We had a news person.
Who was that?
Terry Branham.
So you were saying making sure the best music got played. How much of were you able to pick?
The same kind. Well, for me, it's more of a question because I lean towards the mellow side, and it's like, I can't keep this too mellow. And also at that time, there was this whole like crossover, like Southern rock thing, where it's like, this could be like a crossover country. Like, you know, you had the Allman Brothers and the Marshall Tucker Band and the Charlie Daniels Band and
ZZ Top,
but they were more rock than, you know, some of these, like, you know, Poco and some of these bands really started to skew pretty country. Linda Ronstadt did a bunch of country stuff. So it's like, where's that gray area? Where's that fine line where it's getting to be, you know, too much like that? Or you could play Blondie, but you had KC 101 playing disco music. And it's like, where do you cross that line of, like, you know, David Bowie did some, you know, some stuff that was bordering it, like the Rolling Stones did a couple of things that, you know, that during that time that it's like, some people don't like these because it sounds too disco, you know, like,
right.
You know, so it's sort of like, but that's too heavy metal. So that's how I always looked at it, like that. It's like, you know, how do you blend it? You want to keep people going and wake them up and keep them happy, mostly playing happy music.
How much of that were you able to decide, and how much did Gordon and Eddie, Gordon Weingarth, program director, Eddie Wazoo, music director, how much influence did they have on what you picked?
None.
That's cool. That's great.
The format we had at that time was we had a piece of paper taped to the front of every album, and when you played something, you had to write down the time you played it and what the song you played. And if you went to play an album, like if there was something new or hot or really great, you had to look. And if it was played the last shift, you couldn't play it. So you had to wait at least that would give you 4 hours between shifts before you could play it.
Right.
Other than that, everything's fair game.
Wow. So even deep cuts?
We didn't have that.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
So there was no such thing as a deep cut. It was whatever song on the album you feel like playing, or?
Yep.
Jesus.
But we all knew that if you played too many, that you wouldn't play two unfamiliar songs in a row. I mean, that's common sense.
Right.
You know, if you played something new, you would then play something that people knew. You know, but we didn't have to call it anything.
Yeah. Well, back then, it was really your disc jockeying, because you got to pull your albums, you got to pull your commercials, you know, got to put them back.
And it was also blending. I mean, the segues were really important. So that was...
Right. You have to pick the right song to come in after, yeah.
Well, I mean, you wanted to play a smooth 15-minute block. It wasn't just that you wanted to play, like, four good songs.
So what was... Did you have a favorite segue or an artist you like to put into another? Or?
I don't know. Well, I mean, if you repeated it and it was obvious that you repeated it, that wouldn't be good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, how many times, like, this, I've seen other people do this, but it's like... You know, you have your next record queued up, you know, ready to go, and all of a sudden the song's starting to end. It's like, oh, my God.
Yes.
I know it would go great after that. So you rush to the record rack.
Yeah.
You throw the other one off the turntable. You get the other one, you queue it up, and you, like, just hope that you get it in time. And it's like, and if you can get them to sync and the beat and everything and you get it, it's like, ah.
It's a feeling. Awesome. That's, how many turntables did you guys have in the studio?
Two.
That's tough. See, we had three.
No backup.
We had three in Hamden, so you could always be one step ahead of yourself.
Yeah, no.
Have you ever pulled the needle off the record that was playing?
No, maybe once. But I'll tell you what I did once. I wasn't going to tell this story, but I will. When I was working at night, I spent the afternoon with Stone Man, just hanging out. It was a beautiful spring day, and he goes, "Did you ever try this?"
I love him even more now. I didn't think it was possible, but I do.
I'm like, no. I go, I said, I don't do down. I don't do that. He goes, okay. I said, but he goes, it won't do much for you. I'm like, it'll just calm you down, you know. I said, it didn't do anything. He goes, okay. Well, here, do a little more. So I did a little more, and I fell asleep. And I remember him, he sat there in the chair because I just fell asleep. And he said, I got to go to work now. You okay? You're going to wake up in time? I said, yeah, I'll be fine. So he went to the shift. I said, 1:00. I think I don't know what happened. I'm probably called me to remind me. Anyway, I probably drove like 20 miles an hour. Everything was in slow-mo. So I get there, and I was so tired. So I took Ted Nugent, Stranglehold Live. It's a whole side of an album. And I said, okay, I'll just play that. And I remember waking up and the needle's going, ksh, ksh, ksh. And I'm like, oh, God. So I picked the needle up and I put it at the beginning of the track and I played it again. That's all.
That's great.
That was terrible.
No, that's great.
Oh, God. And I drank a lot of coffee and I was okay. But
I wonder if there's any F-bombs on that album.
I don't know.
It's live Ted Nugent. What do you think it was about that lineup, you guys, girl, that it still has an impact today? People still remember all of your names.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind. I can now, like, say, you know, if I say my name, I mean, not everybody does. It's just that we remember the ones who do, you know. I really think it was that time because radio was a part of everyone's life. I mean, they listened because of the music. We just happened to supply the music. So it was a package deal. Every time somebody says, oh, I remember you from PLR, I said, okay, then you're as old as I am.
Yeah.
Well, it's really a shame that that we're doing this 50th in the middle of COVID and we can't have a big event because that would have been a blast. So
yeah.
Hope everyone just stays safe and rock on.
Here's to another 50.
Yeah, okay. Take it easy. Thanks for the call.
All right, Marcia. Bye.